You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Showgram Extravaganza. Mike Ciano, along with Corey Stats Schwartz, the great crew, as always, on the other side of the glass. And a very special guest on the phone. We'll get to him in a minute. So I gave you a little bit of a reveal. It is a male. So now you don't have to wonder. Oh,
now you've got a 49% chance of knowing who it is.
But we'll get to our very special guest in just a minute, and a contributor to the podcast going forward over the summer as well. But first, some housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is the blog address to get your two-star pitchers, to get your pitcher ditch, to get some shenanigans from the Goose. You can follow the Goose on at ZachMLB. You can follow Corey at Schwartstops. Me at the Cap 23, but the most important is the general account, and that's at Fantasy 411, where you'll get all of that good stuff. We got some news and notes. We got a fun day of returns today on the July 2nd docket, but by the time you hear this, it'll probably those gentlemen will probably be done with their performances, so we could follow up on them next week. But first, we bring in our guest, and we'll go over a bunch of stuff with him, and that is the one and only. We've been teasing this guy for 2 months. I mean, that's how anticipated.
Well, teasing the listeners, talking
teasing
about
the
it.
Listeners that this guy was going to join us for 2 months, and that is the one and only Fantasy 411. We'll call him a columnist.
He's a 411 personality.
Personality, and
part
that is our friend from the north, Fred Zinke. Fred, Mike, and Corey, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. I don't think I've ever been called a personality before. I like that. I like that.
Well, everybody has a personality. Just some of them are good and some are bad.
That's true. We'll figure out in the next few minutes which one I have.
So far, you're off to a good start. And happy belated Canada Day.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Now, wait. We're going to learn a little bit more about Fred today because I want to learn more about Fred, so I'm assuming everybody else does. And whatever I want, that's what usually the consensus is.
You're the guy with the microphone.
That's right. I have the power. But, Fred, what team are you a fan of?
Oh, the Blue Jays for sure. Okay, Canadian and having lost our beloved Expos, I'm definitely a Blue Jays fan. No, I've always lived around Toronto, so okay. I've been a Blue Jays fan going way back.
Okay. Yeah, I figured you were one or the other, and I didn't know if you're an Expos fan in Canada, who do you root for now? Do you just slide over to Toronto? Because it wasn't really a rivalry, right? Or did they adapt the Nats?
I think that a lot of Expos fans did slide over to Toronto, although going into hockey, there's such a big rivalry between Montreal and Toronto that I think some Expos fans just in Quebec just can't cheer for anything that happens in Ontario. So I don't know if they became Nationals fans or just picked up and found a completely different team. I'm not sure.
And by the way, for those of you not good with geography, Ontario is called a province. It's like we have a state in the U.S., and that's where Toronto is. And Quebec is where Montreal is. So there's a little geography lesson for those who don't know anything about Canada.
That was pretty
other
good.
Than Fred.
It's fitting that we're doing this right after Canada Day. So I like this. Okay, so Canada history moment is over. Let's get to the fantasy baseball. So we talk all the time, especially since you really started contributing to the site in wonderful ways with your columns and your previews and your predictions, whether it was daily or, you know, guys to pick up, rookies to watch, you know, rebound candidates. It goes on and on and on. So we've been really talking a lot about your work. And, you know, we can't really talk about your stuff without mentioning how great a player you are. Talk a little bit about, you know, your successes with Tout and whatever else that you think fits. But more importantly, you know, kind of how you got into fantasy baseball and how you developed your winning strategies.
Yeah, I think I'm like a lot of people that got into fantasy baseball in the sense that I've always been a sports stats guy. You know, I love watching games, but I love the math behind it, the numbers behind it, and fantasy baseball is great for that. You know, I played fantasy football and fantasy basketball and things like that, but fantasy baseball was always my favorite one. I love the volume of stats in baseball, and as Corey will attest from playing in Tout Wars with me for a few years, I kind of play fantasy baseball like it's like a bit of a stock market game where I'm constantly shuffling lineups and shuffling my roster and things like that. So writing the articles about waiver wire pickups and guys to trade for and guys to trade away is kind of second nature to me because that's what I'm always doing with my own teams, even in the expert leagues, is always looking to constantly reshape. I'm just not someone to sit still with it for very long.
Yeah, Fred, you know, two titles and two second place finishes in 4 years in Tout Wars. So definitely it's working, but it's kind of funny. You know, the rest of us in the league, you know, when we have conversations, we're like, we can't keep up with Fred in the standings or in making trades. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes who you have on your roster. And I always get a kick out of it. And this happened once earlier in the year. You picked up Jason Hayward in a trade and then minutes later sent me a trade offer involving Jason Hayward.
Yeah.
And it's, but, I, you know, and we joke about it, but I think it really speaks to the fact that particularly in an experts league, you know, a deep league, every little incremental gain over the course of the season adds up. And if you can trade 9 singles and a handful of change for a $10 bill, so to speak, and just keep tacking on those little incremental gains, that really builds up over the long season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll make a trade for all sorts of different types of reasons. You know, it could be because I want to get a guy and hold him for a really long time. I really believe in him, and I, you know, and I'm going to stick with him. Or like you said, with the Hayward, it could be that I got a guy because I like the value in the trade that I just made, but that doesn't mean that I really believe that I'm higher on that player than maybe other owners in the league. So I might be higher on Jason Hayward than the guy who traded him to me, but then I might believe that there's probably other owners out in the league who like Jason Hayward even one more step above what I do. So he might be on my roster, you know, just for a few minutes. And that might be especially true if it's like a certain specialized position, which wouldn't apply to Hayward. I remember a couple of years ago in Tout, I traded for, I can't remember who it was, but I traded for a closer from you, Corey, and then traded him to Ray Flowers before he ever played a game on my team. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, in the first trade, I think I just liked the value, but I didn't really need a closer. So I was looking to move him right away. So I try to look at all of these things from so many different angles. A lot of times when you get trade questions on Twitter and things like that, it's hard to answer them because you don't know the dynamics of someone else's league.
Yeah, right. Now, there's a lot of assuming going on. You know, we deal with that. We take Twitter questions every week, and we used to do a ton of stuff. And I know all spring long you did a great job on Fridays with those chats, and that definitely is challenging. And, you know, I think one thing that's also challenging, and when you're in Tout Wars, though, or if you're in labor, or if you're in, a unique league where everybody pays attention the entire season, you can employ a strategy like yourself where, you know, we all know about the leagues we've been in where you send an email and you never hear back, or you send the trade offer through the site and you never hear back. And obviously, if it's somebody like you who is, you know, planning your next move as you're hitting, you know, a button on, you know, for that one trade there, like the Hayward example, that could really derail your strategy and kind of make you get stuck. But I don't think you're ever going to I never had that problem in Tout Wars. I'm assuming you don't either.
No, not really. And like you say, it is different with those expert leagues. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're talking to people playing in their home leagues, it might not be quite as active, or the knowledge base might not be quite as deep through all the owners.
Right.
A lot of times I'll recommend to people that they really work for pitching, for example, on the waiver wire. But in an expert league, I've come to notice, you know, good pitchers, even after one start, get snapped up really fast. Yeah. And for decent amounts of fab. So it's not quite so easy sometimes in expert league. Sometimes you have to use just different strategies in different leagues, depending on what your competition's like.
Yeah, but you know, one thing that's interesting to me is, you know, talking about the quality of the league, just because, you know, everybody in Tout is a, you know, so-called expert or an industry person or whatever, you know, everybody still, or a lot of people can still value players differently.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that this one's right and this one's wrong. And I suppose over a long season, that's what plays out. But, you know, we've been talking about Jason Hayward a lot. I think he's been traded 3 times already in Tout Wars. Fred got him, traded him to me. I traded him away. It doesn't mean we don't like Jason Hayward. It just might be that we're all valuing him a little bit differently and looking for different things for our roster. So sometimes it's less about the player and more about the circumstances surrounding the player and, and what we need for our roster at that given moment. And I assume Fred just dropped out. I assume we'll get him back.
He was extremely bored and disagreed with your analysis.
Right, he went off to make a trade.
So he flat out hung up.
But, you know, but another thing, and I'm not just vamping here, but because I have some thoughts on this, so it's easy for me to keep talking. You know, Fred's type.
Well, do it live.
Fred's type of approach also depends on engaged owners. You know, if you're going to be a very active trader and make a lot of moves and really, really shake up your roster regularly, you have to have other people that are active. You know, I picked up Jason Mott, and we'll talk about him in a little while later on the podcast, and already, you know, put him out there to the league to start shopping him. And only a couple people have gotten back to me.
Right.
So you can't be an active trader without a lot of trading.
Well, right, and that was right, and that was exactly my point. I mean, I remember, I remember one year I was in an AL only keeper league with guys from work, and I was working. You know, it was actually my first job in the sports industry. And
I thought that was selling peanuts at Yankee Stadium.
I never sold peanuts at Yankee Stadium. So I'm in the AL only league, and I send out, and I was basically pulling a Zinke. I was Zinke before Zinke. I was just going, you know, crazy. And we have Fred back. We'll get back to him in just a second. And I was just going like crazy. And then I send a, you know, this is a long time ago, Corey. So it wasn't like, nobody had high speed, unless I guess if you were a millionaire. I think only Bill Gates and Paul Allen had high speed. So everything was dial up, and we're still dealing with, you know, AOL was the only email, blah, blah, blah. That's how long ago it was. And I emailed this guy. We were talking about trading for Hideki Matsui. And the guy had basically agreed to the deal. So I email him the final thing. I say, hey, just to prove it, we'll send it in. I don't hear back for a week. He finally gets back to me. And a week after that, we make the trade. He was moving, though his computer was disconnected. Hideki Matsui, over those 2 weeks, won player of the week and also had a very good week. We still made the deal. Guess what happened to me that season?
You lost by the margin you would have gained had you had Matsui for those 2 weeks.
Most likely, yes. Yeah. I came in second place by a point or two.
Yep.
And I was just like, you know, and that just broke my heart. Fred, I was telling the world that I was Fred Zinke before Fred Zinke. About making
right,
the trade.
You're right. Like, timing sometimes is everything. And there is a luck factor to that, too.
Right.
You know, you can pick up a guy right before his hot streak, or you can trade him away right before his hot streak. And sometimes there's not much rhyme or reason to it.
No, you know, and you try to, and I know you do this, and you're trying to manage risk. You know, another one, I traded Justin Verlander before he was really Justin Verlander. It was his coming out year, and I traded him for Torrey Hunter, and I made that trade with Ron Chandler, mm-hmm. And it was funny because Chandler puts up on the message board, you know, looking to move Torrey Hunter, you know, send me offers, typical stuff. I go, hey Ron, how about Justin Verlander for Torrey Hunter? And Ron writes back, and at the time I didn't really know Ron that well. I knew who he was, obviously, but I didn't know him that well. And it was maybe my first or second year. It was my second year in town. And he goes, Mike, that is unbelievably the fairest offer I've ever gotten in such short notice. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's like, let's do it. And I was extremely happy with the trade. 2 days later, Torrey Hunter crashes into a wall, and he's out for a month.
And I remember that
was
the
year that
you were crushing Tout Wars, and everybody got hurt down the stretch, and you faded. Trust me, I remember that. You know, it's funny. Seriously. You know, there's a saying that, you know, nobody cares. The one rule of fantasy baseball, nobody cares about your team.
Yep.
And I still remember these teams, these moments you've had. I do care, Mike.
I know you
do. I do care.
Well, we all know you lost by a couple steals on something.
One steal. If I ever see Luis Castillo, he and I are going to step outside.
Yeah, and then you're going to get your ass kicked. All right, so let's let's bring Fred back in. So, Fred, where were we?
Here.
Tangentialized.
Let's do this right here.
All right, let's talk about some news, Fred. And obviously the biggest news for July 2nd, of course, is going to be that Jose Fernandez at high noon is going to return from TJ as he takes on the Giants. I guess it's, you know, hey, let's give him the day game after the night game. Get a little bit of an edge in there.
Sunday lineup.
Yeah, a little Sunday lineup, a little getaway day lineup. What do you think about Jose Fernandez coming back? And he happens to also be facing Matt Cain, who's coming back, so it's a little weird.
Yeah, I could see him having a great start today, and I could see him pitching well for the rest of the year, but it's going to be hard to win games like on the Marlins, especially without Stanton. Like, that's not a very good offense right now, and I wonder if they're going to baby him a little bit. Like, they're pretty much out of it. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. You know, why push him to 105, 110 pitches? If he starts throwing like 85 pitches, I know they babied him a little bit a couple years ago early in the season. Like, if he starts throwing like 80, 85 pitches and going 5 1/3 innings, it's going to be hard to win games on the Marlins. So I could see him pitching well, being a good asset, but not being the ace that he'll probably be by next season.
Right. Fernandez was capped at 90 on his rehab. They say he'll be capped around 90 today. And, you know, this happened last night. I mean, obviously not a pitcher of the caliber of Jose Fernandez. Vincent Velasquez of the Astros, also a very good prospect, got pulled in the seventh inning after 88 pitches. Now, to be fair, you know, he gave up a couple runs early on, but from the second inning on, he was in cruise control, got into a little bit of trouble, and they pulled him out. And to me, you know, it also reminds me of when Danny Salazar first came up, was putting up unbelievable lights out, strikeout numbers, but getting pulled with, you know, one out in the fifth inning because he'd thrown 85 pitches. Now, I understand caution. I totally get that. And I think in Fernandez's case, it's a little bit more justified because he's coming off the surgery. But there's no proof that pulling a guy at a certain point will prevent an injury either. So, yeah, with a pitcher who hasn't been hurt, frankly, I'm more of the mind to stretch him out rather than protect him. But in Fernandez's case, it does make sense because he's coming back from the injury.
Yeah. Fred?
Yeah, especially with them, you know, not really competing seriously for the postseason. I mean, he's not going to get hurt sitting in the dugout. So, you know, he finishes five, he finishes six. You know, he's pitched well. They take him out. You know, it's just everyone's covering themselves, and they just want him healthy next year.
Yeah. And then you can contrast that with another guy returning today,
mm-hmm.
Matt Moore.
Also from a Florida team, huh?
Yeah, I like what you did there. Matt Moore also coming back from TJ. He will rejoin the Rays, but they're competing. Their division's wide open, and they're right there with the leaders. Do you think the Rays will push Moore a little bit harder than more harder than the Marlins would push Fernandez?
I think they probably will. My concern with Moore is the control, because his control's always been really borderline, and that's the thing that's kind of made him – he's been a pretty big fantasy tease, you know, most of his career. Those great minor league numbers, and he came up, and we all thought he was going to be a star, and then the walks have really got in the way. And there's a pretty decent track record for guys coming back from Tommy John did not always have the best command. So if his control dips at all from what it was pre-surgery, then I just don't see him being that effective. That being said, I mean, he's got a good pitcher's park at home. He's got a good defense behind him. You know, he'll probably be fine. But I see Fernandez, for example, being just a way, way better pitcher than Moore the rest of the season. And that's not a great offense, I guess, backing up Moore either. Tampa Bay, I feel like, has been a little smoke and mirrors so far.
And you mentioned the control thing. And, you know, you hear about it a lot on in the booth or on MLB Network, especially from a guy like Smoltz, who dealt with TJ as well. We've seen it this year with Matt Harvey, where he's lost control and gotten roughed up. He's been up and down. Like, you know, he hasn't been Matt Harvey for a couple starts, and then he bounces back and he's fine. But, I think you're going to see that. And I think rolling out – you can't trade for a Jose Fernandez if you draft, right? You know, if you drafted him and you stashed him.
Yeah, you're keeping him.
You keep him.
Otherwise,
why
have him?
Like, you don't have to give up anything. It's like you just have him coming back, and it's great. And you don't have to give up anything for him. I mean, you can trade for him, but even Jose Fernandez is going to come with a hefty price tag even before he threw a pitch today.
Yeah. And, you know, small note about command. Super small sample sizes, minor leagues, whatever, but it's very telling. Jose Fernandez on rehab, 33-6 strikeout to walk rate in 24 and two-thirds innings. Very good command. Matt Moore, 21 and a third innings on rehab, 24 strikeouts and 8 walks. Uh-huh. So again, tiny small sample sizes, but even at that level, you see Fernandez showing superior command. Matt Moore with a 133 career whip. Not great in this day and age.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And like Mike said, if you're gonna trade for Fernandez, you're going to pay ace prices. And if you're going to pay ace prices, why don't you just go out and get, you know, Corey Kluber or David Price or someone who's healthy
right.
and an ace and, you know, is stretched out.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also hard to, you know, it's July 2nd and it's 2 months into the season, but it's still only 2 months into the season. I mean,
well,
you know.
Three, actually.
Three. April, May, June. Oh, yeah, I forgot all about June. I'm sorry. June, I apologize. So, you know, it's like, guys, unless you specifically drafted Matt Moore, I think Moore is a better example because everybody loves Jose Fernandez. Everybody knows he's a stud, blah, blah, blah. But unless you drafted Matt Moore with the intention just to trade him, you're not going to just give up on him until you see what he's got. Because if he comes back and he's good, well, then that 3 months of him sitting on your bench, on your injured reserve, was worth it. If you trade him, it's like, well, why did you take up that spot all season
right.
long? So that it's that fine balance with still 3 months to go, you know? You agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And what do we think about Matt Cain today? I think he's a more interesting, maybe, because he's harder to determine, like a more interesting like conversation topic as far as, like, Matt Cain, you know, I'm not that optimistic, but, like, he's been there before. He's been a really good pitcher before. He's a long layoff now. Like, could he be an asset in mixed leagues, or is he going to just be, you know, 4 ERA, mediocre strikeout rate, just someone you stream for good matchups? I don't know. I don't think anyone really knows what we're going to see from Matt Cain until we really see it.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Cain is that for so many years he was one of those guys who sort of outperformed his peripherals. You know, well, very lucky home run to fly ball rate, very lucky BABIP or whatever, and that went on for years and years and years. to the point where everybody just accepted he would outperform, and then the last 2 years he's actually underperformed.
Right.
So his regression took a long time to strike. But you know, the Giants are a good team. So I think, you know, Fred makes a good point in contrasting, you know, Fernandez coming back to a struggling Marlins team, Moore and Kane returning to good teams. They're going to get more run support. They're going to get more bullpen support. They might get pushed a little further to stay deeper in games and try and get those wins. Kane, I agree, is a very interesting flyer in the deeper leagues.
Yep, absolutely. One more before we let you go, Fred, and that's Ellsbury. He's scheduled to come back to the Yankees on Friday. Beltran might be on his way to the DL. He got hurt, it looked like swinging on Tuesday. You know, again, you can't, it's Christmas when a guy like this comes back. He was having an all-star caliber year. I thought he was doing a really good job, for the Yankees, and offensively as a fantasy player. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes bye-bye and we don't see him for quite a bit. What do you think about his return?
Yeah, he should go right back to being, you know, I guess second tier kind of outfielder below that, those Bryce Harper types, but he should go back to being a second tier outfielder. I think we all want to see Ellsbury steal some bases in those first few games, since it was a lower body injury, put him on the disabled list. But, you know, once he swipes a few bags and then we all know he's back, then, he's terrific. And he didn't show much power early in the season before he went on the disabled list, but we know it's there. And especially hitting Yankee Stadium, he could be, for an owner who needs steals, but also, you know, doesn't want just like kind of a one category, like a Rajay Davis kind of guy. Like he's someone you could really pay for right now and get a difference maker.
All right, Fred, we appreciate it. Welcome to the show, and we'll have you on throughout the summer before you have to go back to educating the fine children of North America.
Ontario.
Okay. Of Ontario.
Thanks, Fred. Have a good weekend.
Take care, Fred.
Thanks.
All right, Fred Zinke joining us. I was going to wish him happy 4th of July, but he already had his.
Right.
Yesterday.
He's like, July 4th. Oh, you mean Saturday?
Yeah, you guys enjoy. I wonder if they double dip. Maybe Canadians double dip.
My brother lives in Canada. He has dual citizenship, so okay. I'm sure he'll be celebrating on Saturday. Oh yeah. And my nieces.
So he had off of work on a Wednesday. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday, Canada?
That was Wednesday.
Wednesday. So yesterday, and then he goes back to work, and then.
Well, he works retail, so he would be working on Saturdays ordinarily. So yeah, he might get another free day off.
Oh, all right.
Cheater.
Yeah, really, seriously. Way to buck the system. All right, let's go to our news and notes that we didn't cover, and there's plenty to discuss. Carlos Carrasco, crazy, what a crazy game.
Yeah.
Two strikes on the Butler, and I wonder. I mean, I know Altuve doesn't make that play because he's even shorter than Kipnis.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying. Cano probably makes that play.
Who's your tallest second baseman?
Yeah, I think a regular height second baseman makes that play. Not to knock Kipnis. It wasn't easy, but
look, who's to say? I mean, you know, Carrasco took a perfect game into the seventh, misses the no-hitter by one strike. I mean, unbelievable performance, 124 pitches. You know, he's been amazing in his last eight starts. 59-11 strikeout to walk rate, 3 ERA, 102 whip. I mean, pitching like an ace.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is this. The first eight starts, he had like almost a 5 ERA, but a 51-10 strikeout to walk rate. So his stuff and his dominance has been there all along, but the Indians' defense was really, really bad at the start of the season. They redid the left side. You're seeing Urshela and Lindor, really defense-first players on the left side. Michael Bourne has come back.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great center fielder anymore, but better than what they were using in the start of the year. So I think there's just been a number of factors. You know, you take that, the BABIP, the home run to fly ball rate, all those things sort of normalizing, you're starting to see the emergence of that dominant pitcher like we saw down the stretch last year.
Yeah, and he was, he was a kind of sexy sleeper that people thought, you know, bust out kind of year, almost like this year's Corey Kluber in a way.
Yeah.
But nobody saw Kluber coming. People have been talking about Carrasco for quite some time and said, okay, this is his year, blah, blah, blah. So.
Yeah, and what was interesting about it to me too is that Kevin Cash, who's the Rays manager, who normally almost got victimized by Carrasco last night, mm-hmm. was on the Indians coaching staff for many years. And after the game, Carrasco and a lot of people around the Indians gave credit to Kevin Cash for his work in helping develop Carrasco as a pitcher. So I'm sure it was a bittersweet thing for Kevin Cash. You don't want to lose. You don't want to get no hit, but you got to feel good for the guy.
And by the way, I mean, this thing with the Rays just constantly getting nearly no hitters and then eventually getting no hit because it's happened to them quite a few times is completely out of control. I was watching this game. I was watching it on the Cleveland feed, and the Cleveland booth said,
they checked with Elias and got a note that said, this is the first time in the modern era, so since 1961, that a team has been no-hit through five, so five full, in three games in a row.
Yeah, crazy.
So we send alerts out here internally for no-hitters at MLB.com because a lot of things are in place. There's a lot of content going on. There's the dominoes, all that stuff. So any time somebody gets through five.
And that's just sniffing it.
Yeah.
That's not even like kicking the tires. That's just sort of looking around.
Right. So, you know, just to get everybody's, you know, alert up just in case you don't happen to be watching that game or paying attention. And, you know, three nights in a row, that alert came out that the Indians were no-hitting the Rays.
You're like, is this thing broken? You're like tapping the screen.
Well, and I mean, Cody Anderson was the first one, and that was insane. I mean, he was dealing. And then Sizemore homers to, you know, end the shutout, the no-hitter, the perfect game, all that. And then Salazar was striking out 800 guys,
yep.
Right?
13 strikeouts.
Yeah, I mean,
Carrasco, 13 strikeouts.
Unbelievable. I mean, the Rays are just, I don't know how they're doing it, you know. Good job out of Kevin Cash because it's smoke and mirrors. George Springer to the DL,
good
potentially. Potentially. He got hit by Edinson, our boy Edinson, who Corey is saying DTM in quotes next to his name.
Edinson, DTM Volquez. There's never been a pitcher with a 3 ERA that I was less interested in having on my team. Hit on his right wrist after the game. AJ Hinch said, quote, he's not optimistic about Springer's health. And, you know, the Astros outfield is a little bit depleted right now. Jake Marisnik is already on the DL. Colby Rasmus is sick. He's been out of the lineup for a couple of days. So you're going to see a lot more Preston Tucker, a lot more Domingo Santana. And here's one thing to keep in mind. Would the Astros move Evan Gattis back out to left field for a little while, and that would open up more at-bats for both Chris Carter and Jonathan Singleton?
Right.
So we're going to have to see how this plays out because, you know, Marisnik is their center fielder. Rasmus is a center fielder. Springer is a center fielder in a pinch. Who's going to play center field? I guess it's going to be Santana. And then you're going to just have to go in offensive first outfield. So I wonder if we'll see Gattis in left field. This is going to be interesting to watch.
Okay. Yeah, we hope it's not true with the contusion. But who knows? We'll still keep an eye on that. The Twins are sending down one big slugging corner infielder for another. But the other happens to be their top prospect now with Byron Buxton up in the big leagues. Miguel Sano took Mike Ciano in Spanish, by the way. Miguel Sano. Ooh,
I like it.
Yeah, you like that, right?
Miguel Sayes.
Yes. he was just tearing it up. So this is exciting. You know, keep an eye out for him. It's not like Vargas is chopped liver, but, you know, Sano is supposed to be, you know, the cat's meow.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the elite power prospect. I mean, Joey Gallo just got sent down. Sano's getting called up. But 2 days ago, Sano was the elite power prospect in the minor leagues. Overall numbers at AA Chattanooga, pretty good. But what he's done in his last 43 games since May 7th, 329, 413 on base, 621 slugging with 10 homers in 43 games. This guy's an elite power prospect. He's one of those guys that I think, and I'm not a scout, but based on my understanding of him as a player and what the numbers tell me and what little I've seen, he's one of those guys that is going to strike out a lot because of approach. You know, he's got some holes in his swing, every hitter does, but this is a guy that's going to work a count and look for something to rake. So that's what I think when I tend to see a lot of walks and a lot of strikeouts together. The guy knows the strike zone, but he's going to go deep into a count trying to get something to crush. This is a player who must be picked up in every league. He's a better prospect overall than Joey Gallo. Mm. He's going to be eligible at third base, unlike Gallo, who was, came up and was a third base, but really was there to DH.
Right.
This is a better prospect, needs to be picked up in every league and every format.
All right, closer carousel in Chicago. Jason Mott, the Vulture win, as the Mets and Cubs show you how not to score runs in Citi Field. And I don't see much more coming today with a day game after a long night game, and DeGrom is facing Arrieta. So that might be a double no-hitter into the 15th. four wins and three saves over the past 3.5 weeks.
Unbelievable. Since June 7th, Mott has three save chances. He's 3-for-3. Hector Rondon's 2-for-2. Justin Grimm got one last night, but that was kind of the Vulture save. And Pedro Strop, 0-for-1. So clearly there's a committee approach, but it looks like Mott has taken over the lead chair. And I think you glossed over this. We don't chase wins, but one of the advantages that comes from being in a committee is that Mott's getting put into a lot of tie games. So you've got those four wins as well. I picked up Mott in Tout Wars this week for $1. No one else even bid on him.
Wow.
I got a win and a save and a win in the first two nights. I'm like, I'm trying to trade him right now to cash in that profit. You know, honestly, on pure performance, you would probably say Rondon has actually pitched a little bit better. Better strikeout numbers. The command has been pretty good. He has. It's not like he's been struggling for the last month, but it looks like Joe Maddon is just really committed to the notion of mixing it up, and now he has a lot of options. So it's good news for Mott. It's bad news, but not terrible news for Rondon. You know, any of these guys could get the save tonight or today if it presents, and it makes you think you almost have to pick up some of these guys if you need bullpen help, whether it's Mott, Rondon, or even Strope. You know, he hasn't gotten the save chances, but he's pitching seventh, eighth inning.
Colorado, John Axford had to leave the team for a family medical issue, so he's taking a leave of absence. Hopefully it's only temporary. And LaTroy Hawkins, the Hawk is back. Gets the save on Tuesday.
He was my third closer on opening day in Tout Wars. 10.50 ERA before he went on the DL. Needless to say, I cut him. Since he's come back, though, only one run allowed in 7 2/3 innings, 7-1 strikeout to walk rate, got the save on Wednesday. Had 26 saves last year. Again, saves are a commodity. Once you buy a prize, it's yours to keep. You got to pick up the guy who's the lead chair, even if it's a temporary thing, because those saves count. You know, it's not like ERA or WHIP where it goes up and down. The save is forever, and you got to cash him in when you get the chance.
Yeah, this Justin Bour.
Speaking of closers, let's talk about Santiago blowing the save and giving up the walk-off homer too.
Justin Bour.
You see how I did that segue?
I like what you did there. Oh, yeah, there he is, Santiago Casilla. Yeah, this it kills me with Bour because he's doing a good job. 261, 8 homers, 17 ribbies, and 134 at-bats since he got called up. And, you know, I just didn't know enough about him, I guess, when I bid on him in an NL-only league. I missed by like a buck or two. I wish I would have spent the extra $2 because first baseman, by the way, are a little hard to find on the waiver wire in NL-only. So he's been doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, you know, as Fred alluded to, the Marlins are struggling. They may be looking more to the future. You know, they've got Mike Morse and they've got Martin Prado and guys
like that.
Bohr's a guy they need to take a look at. He put up decent numbers in the Cubs system before he was a Rule 5 pick. Here's the thing that intrigues me. His average exit velocity per StatCast, 93.3 miles per hour. He's got 71 batted balls. For players with 70 or more batted balls, which is a semi-regular or a recent regular player, he's ninth in baseball.
Wow.
Just ahead of two guys you may have heard of named Mike Trout and Josh Donaldson.
There you go.
In other words, when this guy hits it, he's hitting it hard.
Stays hit.
And exit velocity correlates almost directly with power production. Right. So this is a guy that not many people know about, but this guy has shown exceptional power and should be playing a lot. He might platoon a little bit, but as a lefty, he's going to see the long side of the platoon. In NL-only leagues and deeper leagues, this guy's got to be picked up. The power's legit.
Yeah, I mean, my run-in with him, this is we're talking 5-6 weeks ago. You know, and now I'm like, ugh.
You wish.
I got like Tyler Moore playing first base. Scooter Gennett, since being recalled in early to mid June, 300 hitter, 5 doubles, a couple triples, couple homers, couple 3 homers, 9 ribbies. Following the Wong odor path.
Yeah, you
what
like
is that,
that
all about?
Well, Colton Wong last year, terrible start, got sent down, came back, hit like lights out the rest of the way. Rougned Odor, same thing. Opening day Rangers second baseman gets sent down, crushes AAA, has been raking since he got brought back up. Same thing's happening with Scooter Gennett. Let me repeat that number and restate it in a slightly different way. 10 extra base hits in 60 at-bats. That's 100. I mean, that's like a Todd Helton Coors Field type of pace. That's unbelievable stuff. You know, Gennett is really the same hitter now that he was before he got sent down. He's not going to draw a lot of walks. He's not going to strike out a lot. Only 2 walks since coming back up, 60 at-bats. But he needed to regain his confidence. That was the word he used. He needed to go back down and find his stroke. So the skill was always there. But these young players, sometimes when they struggle, they get into a rut. You send them back down to AAA. Oh, yeah, I'm too good for AAA. I got to crush this. Mm-hmm. And then they bring that back with them. So it's not always the case. But that's why I brought up Wong and Odor, because young guys, the skill was there, but they struggled. They reestablish in AAA, and then it sort of carries over the second time around when they come back up. Jeanette's a guy that, because of that terrible start, got cut, I'm sure, in 100% of leagues.
Yeah.
If people aren't noticing him yet because his overall average is still like 224 or something like that, you got to get this guy on your radar. He's a pretty good hitter. He can hit 290, double-digit homers, might steal a couple of bags. He's got to be picked up now, really, in any league, because middle infielders who can hit are hard to find.
By the way, just back to Justin Bour for a second. He's 27 years old. He's a big boy, 6'4", 250.
He's a big old baby.
So age 27 season, people. But, you know, he only last year was his first. He didn't really get called up to the majors until he was 26.
Yep.
So a late bloomer, if you will.
He put up decent numbers in the minors, but, you know, the Cubs had a guy named Anthony Rizzo in front of him at first base. So, you know, now he's getting a chance. You just hope that he won't lose at bats when Mike Morse comes back from the DL.
You know one of the benefits of being 40 is?
Not being 41.
No. Well, besides that, I look at a birth year of somebody. I say, okay, they're X amount of years younger than me, and I subtract that from 40, and I get the age. And it's just easy because it's round.
That's common core math, as opposed to just looking the year he was born and and taking it away from the current year and knowing the answer.
No, that's too difficult.
You are a corporate math curriculum developer. Good
that's
job.
Right. Yeah, I know, exactly. I have nothing to do with
that.
That
was so common core.
I took 10th grade math twice. Let's just put it that way. That's why that's why they paired me up with the head of stats.
Well, that's why you're a multimedia guy.
That's right, exactly. I know how to look at things. I just don't know how to add them. All right. Taiwan Walker is red hot. You know, if you're patient, you can reap some rewards sometimes. And this guy's a great example of it because he was awful in the early goings. And now in his last seven starts, he's out of his mind.
Out of his mind.
He's out of his gourd.
Okay, first nine starts, 39-23 strikeout to walk rate in 43 innings. So you're seeing the strikeouts, but the walks were terrible. He's cut down on the cutters a little bit more since then. He's still throwing it, but a little bit less. A lot more four-seamers and splitters and controlling the stuff better. Fastballs up, splitters down, really changing the eye level. 51-3 strikeout to walk rate in 48 and a third crazy innings in his last seven starts. That's like a good short reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Starters just don't put up numbers like that. 51-3. And, you know, the amazing thing about this is that unlike Jeanette, unlike Odor, unlike Wong, he figured this out at the major league level. Still only 22 years old, doesn't turn 23 until next month.
Yep.
But they kept working on it. He was able to find his command at the major league level. Very, very difficult to do. And now he's looking like that guy who dominated in spring training and, like, just exploded onto the scene in spring training. He's picked up in every league right now, but that number, 51-3, just really blows me away. It's one thing to dominate with a lot of strikeouts, but to do it without walking people shows that hitters just can't anticipate and hit your stuff. That's the sign of an elite pitcher. So kudos to those who hung on. Kudos to those who traded and acquired low or picked him up off the waiver wire after he got cut somewhere in there. This guy is dominating. And frankly, to be doing it right now, not even at the age of 23, just knock on wood, hope he stays healthy.
Okay, yeah. And again, you know, age matters. That's why when we talk about a guy, and Joey Butler, I told this story a couple shows ago where a friend of mine texted me and said, hey, is Joey Butler for real? And I said, well, you should look at how old he is, you know, and just think about it. But in fairness, you know, Justin Bour, late bloomer too. So, but Walker is not a late bloomer. He's still extremely young.
Yep.
With a lot of hopefully, you know, good outcomes in front of him. Last news and note, and then we're going to do a sick lightning round of the Twitter questions because I want to get them all in. Mike Montgomery, who was just really just a fill-in, call-up guy. Mm-hmm. Nobody really thought anything about it. Maybe in an AL-only league you did, which would make a lot of sense, but mixed league and all that, no. Second straight complete game shutout, 3-2, 1.62 ERA. Doesn't really strike anybody out. The strikeout-to-walk ratio, not great. But you know what? Back-to-back CGSHOs.
That's for real. You know, big prospect in the Kansas City system,
yep.
Kind of fell on hard times, ended
yep.
up with Tampa Bay. You know, reading a lot about him, you know, he really credited David Price and Matt Moore for his development in Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. helping him to go from just a hard thrower who would just try and throw fastballs by people to try and becoming a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Only throws 91 or 92. Change up, really interesting cutter, curveball. And Pat Murphy, the Padres manager, complimented Montgomery after that shutout, saying, we couldn't pick up a pattern off the guy. And I think that's really the sign of a pitcher versus a thrower. Now, let's be fair. The left on base rate, the BABIP, the home run to fly ball rate, all that stuff is super lucky right now. The 162 ERA is going to go up. But we've seen a lot of pitchers who didn't throw as hard even as Montgomery does, with lesser stuff even than Montgomery has,
mm-hmm.
be successful because they know how to pitch. They know how to mix up their stuff. They know how to hit spots. So I wouldn't expect finger quote this level of performance, mm-hmm. but is this a guy who could provide some value down the rest of the season? There's a possibility here. Very interesting pitcher.
All right, get ready. I got some breaking news, but you need to get ready for lightning round.
I'm ready.
And too bad I didn't get this alert when Fred was on, because this is applies to his team. Yesterday was the international signing period,
uh-huh.
where you can sign international players as basically as free agents.
Blue Jays signed Dominican outfielder Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Love it.
Isn't that awesome?
I heard that rumored yesterday, as a matter of fact.
That's according awesome. To our own Jesse Sanchez. The club has not confirmed, but if Jesse says it, it's true, and he was always slated or rumored to be going to Toronto as it was. Okay, here we go. Lightning round. We got a bunch to get to. We're going to get them all in, I promise. At Aversa 4, Iwakuma, Miguel Gonzalez, Gio Gonzalez, or Brett Anderson, rest of season, 16-team roto.
I may be crazy because of the injury risk, but I love the way Brett Anderson is pitching right now. The strikeouts are creeping up. Great team around him, great offense, great bullpen. Now that Kenley Jansen is back, yep. I'm going Brett Anderson.
Okay, at Perry 04-005, who do you like more rest of season, the aforementioned Taiwan Walker or the big guy, Michael Pineda?
Well, I think you've got to keep Walker because of what he's doing right now, but that's not to discount Pineda. 95-12 strikeout to walk rate, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. 353 BABIP against him. So he's had a couple of really disastrous starts lately, but that's a lot of singles and doubles falling in. I think he will get better, but I just love the way Walker's pitching right now.
At Tipsy Pekarik, dump Rollins for Suarez in an NL only?
You know what you have with Rollins. You know, Suarez is not a great offensive prospect, but he's got a little bit of pop. The Reds are a running offense. The thing you have to worry about with Rollins is when Corey Seager gets brought up, whereas Suarez is the Reds shortstop the rest of the way.
Right.
I wouldn't dump Rollins in an NL only. You should be able to trade him for something,
right.
But I wouldn't mind gambling on Suarez the rest of the way.
At Visorman 2K, Keeper League trade, which side wins? Greg Holland, Wieters, and Renfro, or Swihart, Cobb, and Severino?
Renfro, to me, is not a very special prospect. Severino is an interesting prospect, but he's a pitcher.
Yep.
If I'm trying to win now, Holland, Wieters, and Renfro, no question. If I'm rebuilding, you know what? I might go for that side anyway because, you know, Keeper League, Greg Holland's going to have a lot of value. Wieters is a good hitter. Sweetheart's not an offensive catcher. I might take the Holland side regardless.
Who's the better buy low target, Cano or Kemp? That's from at White Squall 691.
You know, the indicator stats don't paint a lot of optimism on either of these guys.
Right.
Strikeouts are up. Walks are down, not hitting the ball hard, isolated power down, all that kind of stuff. I'd go for Cano just because he's a second baseman, but I'm not terribly optimistic about either of these guys right now. They've both been hitting a little bit better lately. Cano, 4 hits and a homer on Wednesday.
Yep.
But the overall numbers don't paint a lot of they're not a very rosy picture.
Yeah, I would do Cano too as well. At @D_AaronMiller, Correa and Bauer for Matt Harvey. Which side wins?
Well, there's value to like for both sides, but I'm taking the Correa side.
Yeah.
Potentially the number one shortstop in fantasy baseball, and in keeper leagues, forget about it.
Forget about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. As much as I like Matt Harvey, Bauer's not a stiff, and Correa to me is, I mean, you can't say he's elite,
right.
But you know that's the guy you
right.
want.
He's on his way. At Salty22, Moreland, who is red hot, or Belt rest of season?
You know, tough choice. You know, Brandon Belt's fallen on hard times lately since I traded for him in Tout Wars. But his exit velocity is right up there with the elite guys, too. Mitch Moreland, great ballpark, great power. I think there's a lot to like on both sides. I would probably go for Belt for emotional reasons, but I think there's an argument for Moreland as well. I think there's a lot to like both of these guys.
At BBeck1313, thoughts on Cody Anderson? Drop Miguel Gonzalez or Jimmy Nelson for him?
Well, you know, his first two starts notwithstanding, he wasn't an elite prospect coming up through the Indian system. But, you know, Jimmy Nelson's been very much, you know, up and down, hasn't really shown anything. We know what the upside and the risk is there. Mm-hmm. Might as well. To me, it's a lateral move.
Yeah.
But why not?
Okay. At the Braden Young, was offered Stanton, Desmond, and Jordan Zimmerman for Tulo, Cespedes, and Papelbon. Stick with my gut and decline?
Well, here's the thing.
Way to work gut in there. I like that.
Tulo to Desmond. Will you stop it? Tulo to Desmond is a step down. Cespedes to Stanton, you know, you're getting a step up, but when are you going to get it? Stanton could be out 4 to 6 weeks. We don't know what the power will be like coming back because of that wrist injury. You're trading a closer for a good starter, so it's hard to say how that helps you. It really boils down to what your needs are and how much risk you're willing to take. I think over the long season, you could get paid on this, but you're taking all the risk because you need Stanton to come back healthy and hitting, and you need Desmond to close the gap on Tulo, and you're giving up a closer.
Yep.
Whereas even if Papelbon gets traded, I think he's probably going to be the closer wherever he goes.
I don't think there's any question.
Toronto. I don't know if I would do this.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I think stick with the gut, Braden, and decline. And finally, at @Evan_Nicola,
Trade Scherzer and Betts for D. Gordon and Harper. Need help on offense with Stanton down.
Yeah, I mean, let's just take this a player at a time. You know, Scherzer's an elite starter. Harper's an elite offensive player. So at worst, that's a wash. Betts for Gordon, you're giving up a little bit of pop for a lot of steal. For steals, you know, that's a wash. I think this is a fair value deal.
Talking about D. Gordon, homies. Inside the Parkers.
Okay, 14 seconds, wow. It's a fair value deal, so if it fits the needs, I think you can go for it.
All right, that'll do it for this edition. And before we go,
super lightning round.
Don't forget to check out the StatCast podcast on the iTunes Store and the MLB.com podcast page. They're doing a great job. It's still in its infancy, only about two or three shows. So make sure to check that out as well. Make sure to keep an eye out for all of Fred Zinke's work on the site. We'll have him on again shortly. For everyone on the other side of the glass, for the great Corey Stats Schwartz, I'm Mike Ciano. And this, have a happy 4th of July.
Healthy, happy, and safe.
That's right. Be safe. Be safe. Watch out for those Roman candles. If you shoot them at your friends and your friends duck and it goes into the yard behind and they haven't been watering their grass, it sets their grass on fire.
And by the way,
trust me, I know from experience.
And by the way, when you're holding the Roman candle, make sure you're holding it so that the end where the phosphorescent flame comes out is the end pointing away from you. Trust me, I know from experience.
This Roman candle safety PSA was brought to you by At Bat, the number one app on the iTunes Store for baseball. Happy 4th of July, everybody. We'll see you next time on the MLB.com Fantasy 411.